After the war, he had two more kids, bought his own little wood frame house in Meriden. But he was not nearly as well suited to peacetime. He flopped in a series of businesses, insurance, real estate, a restaurant. He did finally find a place as a traveling salesman. He repped a number of clothing and shoe lines, and he spent most of his working life driving around southern New England with boxes of samples in his car trunk, which he displayed to storekeepers in one cramped office after another. Looking back on this period in my grandfather's life, he must have been laboring mightily to stay straight. Rusty Barber had his father's genius for violence, which the war encouraged and rewarded, but he was not exceptionally talented in any other respect. Still, he might have made it. He might have got through life peacefully in a left-handed way, but it was a precarious thing, and events conspired against him. On May 11, 1950, he was in Lowell, Massachusetts, calling on Burke's clothing store to show the new line of Mighty Mac parkas for the fall. He stopped for lunch at a hot dog place he liked called Elliot's. As he left Elliot's, there was an accident. A car swiped the front of Rusty's Buick Special as he crept out of the parking lot. There was an argument, a shove. The other man produced a knife. When it was over, the man lay on the street, and Rusty walked away as if nothing had happened. The man stood up with his hands pressed to his belly. Blood seeped through his fingers. He opened his shirt but held his hands over his stomach a moment as if he had a bellyache. When the man finally pulled his hands away, a slick coiled snake of intestines drooped out of him. A vertical incision split his stomach from the pelvis to the bottom of the chest bone. With his own hands, the man lifted his intestines back into his own body, held them there, and walked inside to call the police. They threw the book at Rusty. Assault with intent to murder, mayhem, ABDW. At trial, he argued self-defense, but he confessed, fatally, that he did not recall any of the things he was accused of, including taking the man's knife and gutting him with it. His memory failed at the moment the man came at him with the knife. He was sentenced to 7 to 10 years. He served 3. By the time he got back to Meriden, his eldest son, William, my father, Billy Barber, was 18 and already too wild for any father to control, even one as formidable as Rusty. And here we reach the part of the story where the fabric frays and runs out. For I have no real memories of my own father back then, just fragments. An unfocused blue-green tattoo on the inside of his right wrist, in the shape of a cross or a dagger, which he picked up in prison somewhere. His hands, pale, red-knuckled, bony talons, quite credible as instruments of murder. His mouth full of long yellow teeth. A curved, pearl-handled knife, which he always carried at his belt at the small of his back, tucked there every morning automatically, the way other men slipped a wallet into a back pocket. Beyond these glimpses, though, I just cannot remember him. And even these scraps I don't really trust. I've had years to embellish them. It was 1961 when I last saw my father. I was 5, he was 26. For a long time, as a little kid, I tried to preserve my memories of him to keep him from disappearing. That was before I really understood what he was. Over the years, he dematerialized anyway. By the time I was 10 or so, I had no real memory of him except these few stray puzzle pieces. A little while after that, I quit thinking of him altogether. For convenience, I lived as if I had no father, as if I had come into the world unfathered, and this attitude I never questioned because nothing any good could ever come of it.